Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook Member Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Career Month, powerful career month, truly one of my favorite categories, and I'm very excited to speak with today's guest. Jason Campbell is on the line. How you doing, Jason?
Jordan, thanks for having me. I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. My pleasure. I've looked at what you're doing, some really, really great stuff going on, and I love speaking with Lifebook success stories, man. So how about we start there? Can you give a little background on yourself and your journey into Lifebook?
Yeah, I mean, I was one of the first people within Mindvalley that got the chance to taste Lifebook when we started working closer together. I've been working at Mindvalley for almost 6 years now. I've seen the evolution of Lifebook coming into the ecosystem and doing some amazing stuff. As for me personally, I remember taking the Lifebook, building it for myself in a live session within the office. And you know what? My first Lifebook was actually really bad. I have to be honest. I realized that I put it together. I put some stuff, but it was a lot of what I built in my first version of the Lifebook was actually based on what I thought others expected of me. But it actually became such a critical part of my journey. So the journey started with me putting it together, then thinking like, yeah, that's cute. It's done. I did it during the sessions. And then I kind of never looked at it. And it was only about a year after when I had some things happen in my life that just found myself being a bit derailed. And when I went back to the Lifebook and I said, you know what, I'm going to do this again and put the effort that needs and the attention that it needs, is when I had that reflection of my consciousness come back to me because I had written it down. See, the first one I thought was insignificant, wasn't that good. But then when I looked at the purpose, I looked at every definition of purpose was based on other people's opinion of me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a profound realization.
Right. And so I wouldn't have realized that if I wouldn't have put it down initially. And when I realized that, I said, oh my God, this is not my Lifebook. This is the Lifebook of what I present to others. And when I was able to see that, I just went, okay, what do I want? Who is Jason? And I just went back to the drawing board. And then I really took the time to put it together. So the journey started with one that, like, it wasn't that great, but it was essential for me to get to the second version. And when I did that second version, it became really amazing. And there was still a lot of room for improvement. But during that whole year from when I did that revision, right, so many things started aligning, and it was only at the new year's. So at the beginning of this year, actually, it was on December 31st, 2018. Instead of going to a New Year's Eve party, I said, this is the perfect time to do my third iteration of the Lifebook.
Oh my God. And that was in Miami? You're staying home on New Year's in Miami?
Well, I was still in Malaysia at the time.
Okay.
But the fact is, I was with my family. I was in Canada. And so I just locked myself in a room for like 8 hours. And I just started doing the refinements. And what was the most amazing is even though I had done it, I started doing a lot of things that year, a lot of things I'd forgotten. And when I reopened it and started doing some revisions, I'm like, oh my God, I've accomplished so much this year. And now the momentum needed to keep going. So did a bunch of revisions for 2019. And this year has just been on turbocharge as a third version of Lifebook. It's like, every time you review it, it accelerates the progress.
Yeah. And that's what we hear all the time, man, is the repeat courses really do a lot for people. I think everybody's different and it's also different points in your life, right? But retaking the course is something that people just swear by, having new breakthroughs they couldn't have imagined, especially as you do other personal development work in other fields, right? Mm-hmm. Like what you just described, that was uncovering probably some really deep-seated beliefs, like, you know, the beliefs that I should be working for other people, or that, you know, that's how I should achieve my satisfaction is by pleasing other people. That's some pretty profound stuff.
You bet. So yeah, that came and looked at me right in the face. And now I've redone it. I've built it more aligned to my true needs. It keeps being evolved. And what's funny is as we look at the career section, I pulled it up and I'm looking at it. Haven't looked at it in a few months. And when I look at all the strategies, I'm like, oh my God, I am unconsciously doing exactly the strategies I had outlined at the beginning of the year.
Totally.
And we're on the way.
That's beautiful. Love it, man. Absolutely love it. Now, this is a tough question to answer, but I ask it to a lot of members. What is your number one single biggest breakthrough or takeaway from Lifebook?
Ooh, isolating it. I think the one that's most obvious is, and obvious from an external point of view. Like people look at I had a major health and fitness transformation, like losing weight, getting into like the most rock solid body I've ever had in my life. And this is what most people can only see. They're like, wow, your health and fitness has changed. And I remember that in my life book, when I set a goal of what I wanted my body to look like, I had put an image of Ryan Reynolds in Blade. He played in Blade, and there's a scene of him that he's like without a shirt with a six pack. And I put that in my life book. Mm. And when the end of 2018 happened and I took a picture and I put it next to it, I went like, holy shit, I have the exact same body.
Love it.
And what was cool is that all came, that was just the health and fitness. And then people say like, wow, you really changed there. And I'm like, you know what? That was just the symptom of working on all the other categories. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So when you asked me what's the single biggest breakthrough, this is the one that was the most visible, but all of that was fueled by a work on a lot of the other individual categories, the character, the emotions, all of that.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Do you find health and fitness to be a big supporting category for your career?
I find that it's actually one that I see kind of trickles in as I work into everything else. It happens naturally, especially when the character is aligned. I find the character is the biggest supporting category for my career, actually.
Mm. Oh, I like that. Can you extrapolate on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of everything you want, especially when it comes to setting goals from this tangible, like if you could go into the spiritual space, which I'll only touch on lightly if we want to go there, but I find the character is my supporting category for everything that is a kind of ego, like three-dimensional world chases, such as the career goals, finance goals, as well as the health and fitness goals. They're very, very tangible. And to have those, like if I want to go to the gym, I need to honor my word with action. I need to really have a strong character that says, if I'm going to hit the gym at this time, I'm going to do it. When it comes to career, same thing goes, is saying, hey, if I say that I'm not going to hesitate moving forward and taking action, I need to make sure that whatever I say is the action I'm going to take to move forward is being done. And that comes from strong character, strong responsibility.
I love that, man. I love that. Two of my favorite categories, honestly, those are in the running: quality of life, career, character, love relationship, of course. Mm. Those are all, yeah, that you're speaking my language, man. I really like that. I like that a lot. Yeah. Why don't you share something from your life book? Maybe something from your premise or vision or purpose for the career category?
Yeah. Well, it's fun because I'm looking at it right now. I think one of the really fun premises I have in the career category here is you can do good impact or bad impact. Good impact is always better in terms of making money and feeling good about it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what I talk about career is that, you know, it is whatever you do to make an impact in the world. So you can be a business owner, someone in a career, a freelancer, side gig, active investments. These are all activities that create an impact for yourself, those around you, and every stakeholder touched by what you do. So with that, you can do some good impact or bad, but when you do good, it always brings more money and it always makes you feel good about it. That's a big container of premise that I have in the career.
Totally. I like that. What else do you have for us? Maybe something in the purpose category?
Let's see what I got for purpose here. This is actually a paragraph. I love this paragraph I wrote in purpose. I have a big part of our lives will be spent at work. And if it wasn't going to be work that brings joy, then it seems that it's taking away a big part of living. Having a career or businesses that are fun, make me grow, generate income and impact that I want to see in the world are all key elements of how I want this pillar of my life to be. Freedom and flexibility are also very important, and I always design this in my life.
Mm. Is that something that was hard for you to establish, that kind of freedom? I remember that was a goal I set in my first life book 10 years ago, and I'm literally now just achieving it.
Wow. No, for me, it's interesting. I realize when I consciously put this, I unconsciously go towards it. So we talked about Miami. The reason I'm in Miami was the fact that I realized that flexibility and freedom needed to be expressed. And so I moved out of Malaysia, the Mind Valley headquarters, and designed a lifestyle to work remotely from Miami, which I thought was an environment that I was curious about exploring. Jeez. And so here I am.
That's so cool. I hear it's a crazy city. Are you enjoying it? Talk about creative expression and free expression.
Yeah, it is great. And you know what's really interesting is I'm here in Miami, but I don't drink alcohol. This is actually something that aligned with my health and fitness goals. So if I go back, I'm touching that. I went like, okay, what are the things that align with all the health and fitness where I know I'm going to live to 120? Well, drinking alcohol and getting drunk isn't one of them. Smoking anything of any kind and having smoke go into my lungs isn't one of them. Mm-hmm. And so these decisions were very strong. So being here in Miami is interesting because there is that culture that's hard about party, but it's not something I get to witness. What I have discovered is there's a conscious community of people doing amazing things to make an impact in the world. Again, the reason I'm here aligns with the career goals. And funny enough is when I look at the strategies, I realize that I'm executing on those strategies unconsciously. But then again, it is kind of conscious because I set the intention and my body goes into autopilot to make those activities be something that I do routinely while I'm here. And I'm almost blown away as I'm going through this with you, but this is the power of Life Mode.
I love it, man. I absolutely love it. Congratulations. I'm really happy for you and your whole crew over at Mind Valley. Everything you guys are doing, it's really taking off now and starting to take shape. And this is a good segue to bring up, you know, you're going to be a big part of the community, not just you, but the whole Mind Valley team. We're going to be leading some challenges here through different categories. I know you'll be leading a career challenge.
You bet.
I'm really excited about that, man.
Yeah.
Have you been surprised or impressed with the amount of community support, community love that Lifebook is creating?
Well, there's a lot of people that have done the Lifebook. And when you start having that conversation with someone else who's done their Lifebook, you can get straight to the core of real conversation, right? So I think it's going to be amazing to get that engagement in the community to bring this challenge that we've been cooking up around the career level. And we're going to have something super excited for this month when we go through it.
Totally. Yeah. And that's a good point. When two Lifebookers talk to each other, the conversation's completely different than if they're talking to someone else in their life.
You bet.
But I also think that gamifying it and doing some fun challenges and some exercises is really going to take things up a notch. So I'm really excited for that, man.
Love it.
But I want to talk less about Lifebook and talk more about you and your expertise, because you are seriously cutting edge when it comes to sales and marketing, and not just sales and marketing in like a corporate sense, but man, it is so important now more than ever in this independent, autonomous world. Like everyone is trying to sell themselves in some way, right? So why don't you just talk to me first? Why don't you talk to me about your highest leverage mindset when it comes to this whole idea of presenting yourself in the world?
I love, you know, my whole premise around selling is actually something that really gives a lot of power to people who might have struggled with it. You know, and you definitely hit the nail on the head when you say, like, today more than ever, you know, people have to work more independently. They have to sell themselves. There seems to be a lot more noise out there. So like, how do you stand out? And how do you do it in a way that doesn't make you feel like, oh, this drains me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So always the premise that I bring as a suggestion for people, especially when it comes to selling, that I find is so powerful as a premise in the career category, is the fact that I truly believe that selling is the greatest expression of love.
Mm. Elaborate on that.
And people go like, what the hell do you mean right. by that? How does that work? So the whole thing that I teach is this. Listen, selling is basically an energy exchange between two conscious beings, right? There's one person who wants to offer something that is of a certain energy unit and is asking in return something else of energetic value. And I use the word energy with a lot of intention because this could be, you know, goods and services for money. It could be, you know, any kind of trying to incentivize someone to do a certain action in exchange for their time. Mm. You know, there's so many different things that can be exchanged, and it happens through communication, persuasion, and selling. And another reason why I use the word energy is because the underlying transactional balancer that happens through here, and people follow me on this one because it's really important, there is always an emotion that gets transacted every time a sale is made.
Totally.
The question is, what is that emotion and why? So a lot of people, when it comes to selling, they feel some sort of fear about it. It's like, oh my God, I hate it. I get so fearful around it. You have some that have guilt and shame around it, you know? Especially if it's about selling a product you don't even believe in, there's an emotional balancer that's very negative that'll happen in that transaction.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
So what I propose to people is this possibility that if you sell from an energy of love or above, then you're going to find that you will become unstoppable in getting the positions you want from a promotional, getting like a certain promotion, landing that job. Or if you're in a direct sales role, you'll see that you'll be able to put in so much more energy to make so much more impact in the world than you ever thought possible when you operate from that space of love. And I do have a framework to make people really make that transition and skip over to that side of love, which we can go through right here.
Oh, please. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So in essence, how do you get through a place of love when it comes to selling? Well, the number one space you always have to start from is an introspective on the self. You need to build on self-love. And this concept is no strange concept for anybody who's a life booker. Because you look at when you're working on all those categories, you have to understand that there's a lot of belief works that need to be done. There's premises that need to be challenged. And a big one of them is you are worthy of love. You are worthy of your abundance. You are worthy of everything you desire.
Totally.
Right?
Totally. That's the number one step.
Yeah. And quite honestly, I wish I could come here like I'm a godly figure telling you that, oh, this is how I've done it and I'm perfect. Jordan, I'll be honest. This is the hardest one that I even struggle with.
Right. Like, it's not a switch that gets flipped. This is something ongoing.
It's an ongoing journey. And it's so funny because the first time I put this concept together, the self-love piece was the one I went the quickest over because it's the one I didn't even want to put a mirror in front of myself for. You know what I mean?
Wow. Totally. You skip over the parts. It's exactly right. You skip over the painful parts.
Right. And so what I've realized and what I'm still dealing with today, I find blocks when it comes to selling myself, because I'm very skilled at taking anybody else's products and selling it with glory and grace and love. And when it comes to myself, I still hit roadblocks that make me hesitate.
Wow.
And so what do I do? I'm continuously on that journey of self-mastery, self-awareness, continuously growing, building on that self-love. And a lot of that is actually supported by exploring in my spiritual category. That's where I find most of it.
Wow.
And so I just want to be really honest with the people here that it's like, hey, I am someone that's really good at teaching the concepts of sales, but I'll tell you, I feel those limitations of like, hey, should I be charging this much when it's my own personal thing? And to be honest, I think the first time I witnessed this is when I used to throw parties in college. And I realized that I would feel so much, like I would feel a pain when I'd have a friend saying like, I don't want to pay the $10 or $20 cover charge for this. Like I would organize these ridiculously amazing parties. Like one time I brought 3 tons of sand inside an apartment to throw a beach party in the winter in Canada. And that's a story for another time, but still.
Well, there was guilt around collecting for that sand bill?
Yeah, when somebody would come, a friend would be like, come on, don't charge me. And they would almost like, they felt like I was challenging the friendship or I felt like there was a lack of love coming back if I had charged. And I feel that might have been carried over in my current practices. So, you know, I am aware of that. I am working on this. And I want people to know that, listen, if you need to deal with self-love, that's okay. And it's so much easier selling someone else's product to refine your skills as sales. But when you get to really sell yourself, that is something you'll need to overcome. And it's a beautiful thing to overcome.
Man, that is such a good point.
The process and the journey itself is huge.
That's huge, man. Yeah, you some serious knowledge there. I think that there's a common misconception that if you have a great product or service or skill, that you're going to find success automatically, right? That it directly translates to success one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really the case, is it?
No, no. And you'll see, I'll touch on this even more because when the second love, and I'll tell the surprise right away, the second love is the love for the product. And here's the way that it's most difficult. If you are an artist and you sell your own work, it becomes one of the hardest things to do. And most people even recommend that you should find agency to sell your own art or sell your own product because you will discount it always because you have such a compelling incentive to get your creation out in the world.
Wow.
So
that's totally true.
So now you got a duality. You're like, yeah, I need to create this. I need to sell. I need to create the abundance. I have to have that self-belief. But every sale that isn't made means my work doesn't get to go out in the world. So it becomes a very, very amazing, juicy, fascinating story and journey over that love, because now you got to love the product and you got to love yourself. And then you got to see where your priorities. So sometimes they say find agency if you're not overcome that hurdle yet. Others is go right into it and go and dig into yourself and figure it out, because regardless of what you choose, that journey is going to be juicy.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. And something like art, very closely tied to yourself, but any product is tied to yourself. Anything that you've created is very, you know, it's tied to your ego. It's who you are. A business is like a child. I know it's cliche and maybe a little overblown, but I definitely see the resemblances. What surprises me, Jason, is that you know, there are actually two kind of schools of thought when it comes to doing what you love for a living. One school of thought being find your passion, make it your job, love what you do every day. And I'm surprised that you kind of are preaching from both schools, because the other school of thought is don't ruin your hobby by turning it into your job. have a nice paying job that takes care of security, and then let your hobby be your hobby, and that'll be it, and that'll be where you'll find your fulfillment, and you won't have to worry about the bottom line or sales when it comes to the thing that you love. Both very equally true, depending on who you are, your wiring, your place in your life, but you seem to have kind of one foot in each realm.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. I wouldn't say one is, like you said, not one as bad as just different premises based on what aligns with you. One thing I find is more aligned. My school of thought is I actually took a quest at Mindvalley from Stephen Kotler, which is the habit of ferocity. And what I like is when they try to see what stacks you to really get turbocharged, is you find what are the things that you're curious about, what are the things that you're passionate about, and what are the things that you really want to see happen in the world. So you kind of have that contribution, you have that passion, and you have the things you're just curious about. And when you stack that together, it becomes a really strong glue that pushes you to go through any of the hurdles that you need to go through to make sure that whatever it is you're doing, you're going to reach the masses. And guess what is the one skill you need to master regardless of what you do and you want to be unstoppable? Is sales.
Right. That's, yeah, it's an inevitable no matter what. That's a good point. But yeah, I didn't want to sound like I was disparaging either one. I've actually heard really, really smart people make arguments on both sides, but it's a real thing. If you're having success or you're really deep into your hobby and you wonder if you want to take it full time, that's a real big decision. So yeah, interesting stuff.
We touched on the self-love, which opened a can of worm. And I already mentioned the fact that you got the love for the product, right? So that's the second of the three loves when it comes to selling. Loving the product, I'm going to introduce two schools of thoughts as well here. Because one of them says, if you have a product that you need to sell, you can either, the line will usually, and see if you can complete this one for me, Jordan, fake it till you
make it.
Right? And so that's one school of thought. So, and quite honestly, I've been in that position where I had to sell things I didn't feel super comfortable about. But remember that equation I talked about, how the energy kind of always balances
sure.
and the emotion?
Yeah.
Man, some of the darkest things I had to process as far as burdens emotionally was when I had to sell something I didn't believe in and convince myself to sell.
Right.
And so what I encourage people to consider at this point is if the product isn't at the value and you can't sell it from a place of love, don't fake it till you make it. Just fix the product.
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Right. Like, just fix the product. Like, listen, you can be more honest. You can be more transparent about the shortcomings about the product. You might have to adjust the price if that's the case. What I find is the most practical thing I can give to people as far as how to fix a product, especially, well, it actually can be applied in yourself, like if you're a consultant, an artist, et cetera, or it can be applied if you're selling someone some product in a really straightforward way, is whatever product you have at the current price point, imagine that you needed to sell it for 10 times more expensive. When you need to look at selling it for 10 times more expensive, you got to make a list of like what would need to be in that product if it was 10 times more expensive to make it worth it for someone.
Right.
So
that's an interesting thought experiment.
Right. So if let's say I'm a consultant, like a sales consultant, I'm like, you know what? I charge like $10,000 for my services. Now charge $100,000. What would be in your package if you charged $100,000? You'd be like, wow, you know, I'd be flying in a crew into the office. I'd be doing a month-long onboarding. Like, you could go crazy, but now you see your ideas are focused on value generating, not cost cutting, and not like trying to find the marketing thing to kind of tweak the perceived value. You're literally going to find ways that generate massively more value than what you currently are doing.
I love that, man. That's awesome.
Now there's two results that are going to come from this exercise. Is number one, you're probably going to come up with a product that's more expensive than what you already had. And it might not be like 10 times more, but it might be just like 4 times more. And the other thing is you'll be like, you know, what's the value of all these things that I'm adding on? And what could I actually throw in my existing offer that would make me so excited about selling it at the current price point, given that I know how much it's going to transform somebody's life, organization, whatever is the end client that you sell to. But once you've come up with all these ideas, now you can look at what's the cost of delivering these, like what's the profit margins, and now how do I package this into something that just blows the lid off when somebody uses and decides to transact with you.
Love it, man. That's a powerful mindset.
Right. So you focus on that impact, it really makes a difference. So that second one, the product, you know, add the 10x value. And that's the same thing when it comes to you, if you're your own art. Like if you had a piece of art, like what would make it 10 times more expensive? You will start finding inspiration and you'll start going to have the conversations with the people that do sell for 10 times more expensive. So you can understand what does it take? What do I need to do? What are the steps? And now you have a blueprint.
Love it, man.
Cool. The final one, this is the most fascinating of the concepts. It's the one that I'm elaborating the most within a product I'm putting together, but it's the love for the stakeholders. And initially, when I talked about this model, I used to say the love of the client, but I wanted to expand it to the love of the stakeholder. And I realized that depending on people's level of consciousness, the stakeholder always changes.
Hmm.
So let's say you're in absolute poverty right now. You are, you know, you're trying to make ends meet. You're trying to pay the mortgage, pay the rent, put food on the table. Listen, you're selling a used car. I don't care. I need food on the table. And so when you see examples of bad sales, and I use the used car example because it's the stereotype around sales, but when you understand that it's not a question of a salesperson with a bad intention, you're talking about a sales interaction with the stakeholder being necessities that need to be met from that person's consciousness level, given that this is what needs to happen. You can't even think beyond that. Depending on what your school of thought, you could think about like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and those needs, those physiological needs, those first things need to be met mm-hmm. before you can step to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's closer to the Mind Valley community is you can think about the chakra system, right? If you are having an unhealed root chakra, you're going to have some issues here.
Mm.
And so if you're seeing that foundation, that security is not there, you're going to sell from that place. That it doesn't matter the damage you do to the person you sell to. Now, what I love about this new definition is there is a solution. And what happens is when you're able to sell from a higher level of consciousness, which is, you know, first you're serving yourself, then maybe you're serving the entire company you're with. You really believe in the company. You want it to succeed. So you really push to make as many sales. There's a bit more abundance that comes your way when you've expanded that to having care for the company you work with. Now, when you pass this first threshold, which is you have a care and a love for a stakeholder, which is the client you're selling to. Like when you make that switch and you now care and love the client you're selling to, that's when the magic starts happening, because you start doing everything that is required to make that client understand the value of the product you're giving to them. You're starting to really do the service that is required for them to be ultimately satisfied. I mean, think about the energy you would come at it when you have the client that you know the moment they transact with you, they will be in the care of and handled with the most amount of value that you are going to give to them. That is so much more than what you're asking mm-hmm. in turn. You will be relentless, right?
Yeah.
And so this is really interesting. And again, once you start operating from this energy, you're going to see more abundance comes your way. And here's the magic. The magic is that the larger the stakeholder, the more abundance comes to the salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
Think about Elon Musk. Elon Musk wants to make us an interplanetary species. He is thinking, every time I make a sale of a Tesla car, I am one step closer to building what is required to make us colonize Mars to save the human race.
Right.
How much energy do you think he's putting into every single sale to make sure that it transacts with the most amount of people? Because he knows that every time he does, it's not just about getting a check in your pocket. It's about saving humanity.
Yeah. We just talked about this with the episode with my father, John Butcher. So that's crazy that you say this. But yeah, you're 100% right, man. It's a whole different approach. It's a totally different ballgame.
You bet. And this actually becomes a solution for the case of the used car salesman who needs to feed and pay rent, is that when you sell from love, the person you sell to is more abundant and you become more abundant. And guess what can lift people out of poverty is when you get to operate with a larger and larger stakeholder base because you've already got foundations in place. It lifts everyone. It's a tide that lifts all boats. And this is what I mean from selling from love, is that thing that you do that every time you put a love energy into it, you feel it, they feel it, and every stakeholder feels it, and you start rising the tide of humanity.
I love it, man. That's some powerful stuff. And it's a challenging thought. Like you said, challenging premises is the name of the game at Lifebook. And this is one that I feel really needs to be challenged. So I love what you're presenting. Do you have any other advice for people who are just having a hard time selling and presenting themselves with that kind of confidence, that kind of passion? I mean, you just gave such a great outline, but any exercises or principles that you can share with people to try to enlighten them?
Yeah, well, one of the things is that if you want to get good at sales, you're going to have practice and training. Like now it's okay, I get it, Jason. Like, so what now, right? And I love this part. So one thing that happens is once you understand this premise, every time you read a book or take a class on sales, you're literally learning the language of empathy. You're learning what is the language, the tools, and the systems you need to follow so that you can communicate better to the other human being so that you can understand how to give love, which is where you start having these ideas like, hey, I need to learn about how to do marketing. I need to see what makes people convert. You start using all those marketing and sales terms with an ideology and a goal or a mindset premise that says, every time I get better at this, I get to give more love. And so what I encourage people is to first let this premise be something to consider. And if you adopt it, now, every time you invest time into learning something new about sales, whether it's how to prospect, how to close, how to automate, how to market, how to make sure the people are served once you sell to them, they're all languages and tools of empathy. And so you become thirsty for them. And if I want to go more concrete into this, if anybody wants to work on their sales skills, I say find a way that you can be in a very fast cycle of sales scenario within the workplace. For example, one of my first jobs, it was something I did in my early 20s, is I found myself having to get on the phone with hundreds of people a day to book appointments with realtors. And what happened is I got through a really rapid cycle of realizing that even if I get a no, it's not a rejection of me, it's a rejection of the offer. And I can't take it personally. And I think that's a big thing that people hesitate with, is a fear of rejection, is a big hesitancy when it comes to sales. And if you can be in an environment where you can face a lot of rejections really rapidly, this is really helpful in your growth for self-love and really understanding that sales isn't as scary as you need to see it being.
That's a really good point. Yeah, the faster you can get those reps in, if you will, as opposed to just doing longer, you know, not as quick as a turnover, that makes a lot of sense. That's going to improve your experience rate faster.
Listen, I'll give you a really simple exercise for people to do that's probably I'm going to give a challenge to everybody in the Lifebook community, is if you end up doing what I'm going to suggest here, I want you to email me, jason@mindvalley.com, and just put a subject line, I did the challenge. And this is it. Go, like, we just had, for example, Hurricane Dorian happened and impacted the Bahamas almost a month ago, I think. And it was tragic. Like, so many people got impacted. And there's so many charities right now that are raising funds. Mm-hmm. So what if you just went and knocked on the door of every neighbor you have? Go and knock at 20 doors and just say, like, hey, I live next door. I just wanted to come by and say, hey, I'm actually going to be giving myself $50 to a charity that's going to be supporting Hurricane Dorian. I wanted to ask if you would be down to support as well. You heard what happened, and I'd love to see how many people I can actually get to want to donate to the charity. Like, just pick a charity that you feel passionate about and go knock at 20 doors, tell them that you're donating and you're inviting them to do the same.
Wow. I love that.
Simple, right?
Yeah.
Simple. But see what emotions come up and then journal on this. Like, if somebody writes to me with and has completed this challenge, I will give them a free Mindvalley product. I think, like, just to incentivize this, I just want to see how many people will actually do it and tell me what their experience was. I'll give them a $300 plus Mindvalley product.
That's
okay?
Really cool, man.
Like, because I know what will happen. Like, you will go there, you'll feel rejection from some. Think about it. Is it because of the way I approach? Maybe. And then you'll have all these stories come up in your head, and then just do it again.
Wow.
I'll tell you this, Jordan. My first time I picked up the phone, when I had to book an appointment with a realtor, I had a script and everything. The first call, I just started with the line. I was like, hi, my name is Jason Campbell. I'm calling from ABC Real Estate. And I just want to let you know that your free report on your home evaluation will be in the mail in the next 24 hours. Is that okay? And they're like, yeah, thanks. Bye. Click. And they hung up on me. And I got terrified. I was like, I don't want to do this. And then the boss walked in. He's like, why are you crying? And then I was like, you know what? It's okay. This was a lesson I needed. Second call, the people went like, oh, thank you. Then I followed the script. Then I started booking. Then I got excited. Then I started being enthusiastic about it. And I went up that wave of emotion. So it did start from a place of fear. And I went all the way from up to a place of love, because I went like, wow, the realtors here are really better than all the realtors I know about. And they're going to serve these people amazingly. So I need to pick up the phone. And I remember one lady, I think I called her 25 times. Every time I called, she'd be like, oh, just call back in 3 months. I'd call her back in 6 weeks. And then she'd be like, oh, call me back. And then at the end, when she ended up signing her house and listing it, she told the person, the reason I did it is because there was a guy that just called me, I think, like 25 times. And if that person is so passionate about making sure that I work with you, I know you're going to be passionate about selling my house for the top dollar.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely, man.
So
absolutely.
I'm hoping this energy, I'm really at a high energy when I speak about this, but I'm looking to make sure people understand the passion that I speak about. This topic is so important to me. And if you can go out and start realizing that what you're doing is important, and if you can get over that hesitancy, that fear of rejection, you'll be able to be unstoppable and come from this enthusiasm that, let's be honest, it's contagious.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man. No, I love this. And I love your outside of the box kind of thinking here. And this is what the world needs right now. And this is also what's succeeding, right? This is what people want to see. Do you feel that things like charity and transparency and contribution and things like sustainability, these are terms that are entering the free market, you know, business world now more than ever, and not just in a small way, but in a major way?
I mean, I'm reading a book right now called The Healing Organizations, which is all about, and this is by author Michael Gelb. It'll be out in a couple days, I believe, or in a month. But I'm lucky I get to have advanced copies of books like this because I'll be interviewing him for the Impact at Work mentoring series at Mindvalley. But this is the thing. The most successful businesses that are going to be happening in the future are the ones that are so aligned with a love for a large amount of stakeholders that it will draw in the best employees. It will make sure the products sell more customers than any other company. It becomes a magnet. The love just attracts all the good that people are looking to see in the world. And this is really the next revolution that's going to happen. And this is actually what I feel is going to solve every major problem we see in society today, is when you start operating from a higher level of consciousness that looks at a larger number of stakeholders. And it starts with every single action or every single sale that you make, if you can do it from a place of love.
I love that, man. And this is something that we've been talking about for a little bit on this show. Do you feel that things like consciousness and discipline really steer it in a different direction than the lack of those things? You know what I mean? Do you feel like that's a key ingredient for a fair and just and beautiful and benevolent free market society?
You know, this is a subject of debate for, you know, all the years that we've been around. I pray and I wish and I choose that. I'm actually reading a very interesting post right now on a blog called Wait But Why. And it's talking about the story of us. And there's a little interesting dilemma they talk about is, if let's say, if you are going to be a collaborating species, right? And this goes really deep, and I don't want to go too deep into it. I would encourage people to go read it. But when you are acting as a society, as a group, right? There's a lot of collaboration that happens, and everybody operates at their higher level of consciousness and are operating at the best level of consciousness. The problem arises when an entity like a company that operates by the rules and is super fair and is doing all the good thing faces a company that will cut the corners, be relentless, use deception, etc. And they just come face to face where the honest company right. is just saying like, hey, let's be friends. And the other one's like, yeah, I'm going to destroy you.
Right.
Then you're seeing that the company that says I'm going to destroy you wins the battle. But there is a shift that's happening, and it's not because of the companies, it's because of the individuals.
Yes.
The responsibility belongs to the individuals. We need to be the ones, like every dollar that we spend on anything is a vote of the what we want to see in the world.
Yes.
So as much as selling is an expression of love, spending is an expression of love as well, but it can also be an expression of fear. What are you spending on with what energy is just as relevant of a conversation as what are you selling?
That's exactly right, man. And that's where it gives us the power. I'm tired of people taking the, you know, in conversation, taking the power away from the consumer. All we have to do is educate and enlighten the consumer. And that is really the key, I feel. So you're speaking my language there.
There we go.
I think also that's the other thing about the internet and the transparency that the internet provides. Like, nasty emails get leaked now, and a consumer might see that email on Twitter and choose not to engage in business with your company. That's crazy.
Right? So,
but it's a real thing.
I'll tell you one case I'm looking at right now. There's this cereal. So I bought these like vegan breakfast sausages, all right? And I'm cooking breakfast, and I look at the list of ingredients, and there's like a ton of things on there. And I'm like, hey, there's a line that you can send out a request. But one thing that's interesting about these vegan sausages by Kellogg's, or a sub-brand of Kellogg's, is it has zero sugar, okay? Mm-hmm. And check this out. There's a ton of ingredients, and I'm like, I wrote to their support. I'm like, hey guys, I'm just curious. I'm looking to eat the healthiest sausage that are vegan. Love the taste. Everything's good. But I wish there would be something I could understand. Like, why is there so many of these ingredients that I don't even understand? The reply they sent back was just like a one-liner without any consideration that just says like, hey, you know, what's most important for us is the taste. And what allows the sausage to bind together is all the sugars we've put into it.
What?
And then Then I'm like, what? But there's zero sugar in here. And so now I'm like, now I need to kind of go dig deeper. I got to reply to them. And like, this is possibly something I'm going to post up and be like, this zero sugar sausage contains a bunch of ingredients. Whoa. And when I wrote to their reps, they replied to me that it's the sugar that binds us together. What is going on?
That's creepy, man.
I know. So guess what?
I want to know that as a consumer.
Right? So the question is, how much do you care about the impact of every little thing that's happening around you on what you spend on? And what is it doing to the world? Is it making it better or worse? Is it coming from a place of love or fear? That's the only two things. If anybody's looking at their spiritual category and loves the messages from, say, Conversations with God, the Neil Donald Walsh series, etc., even if you talk about things like the Course in Miracles and everything, like it's always saying the only two things that happen is love and fear. So where are you spending your money? How are you selling? The more you step, and let's not be perfect here. Like, let's not set that as the parameter, but how can you be a little more conscious about all these little decisions every single day? As a collective, we start making a difference.
Totally. And that's the only way we're going to get better if we start minding our own business, not judging what our neighbor's spending on. You know, maybe if they're interested, enlighten them, but don't go jumping down their throats, right? It's about all we can really control is tending to our own garden and how we spend our own energy, right?
You bet. I mean, this is true for like everything, like even in relationships, you want to tell your partner to do something different, just be the change you want to see.
Totally.
And same for like I mentioned, I think earlier in this call is the fact that I don't drink anymore. And so I remember I used to beat the drum on trying to get like a family member to quit drinking, but then I'm like, wait, I'm drinking myself. That's pretty dumb. now I don't say anything, but I just stop drinking and the person just witnesses.
Whoa.
And whether they make the change or not, it's not up to you.
I like that.
But all you can be is an exemplar.
I like that. That's as good a transition as any. I want to talk about relationships. I'm a big fan of relationships. Comes up all the time in the life book process, obviously. What do you think about building a good team of peers, you know, people you can rely upon to make extraordinary career success happen? Some people can do it all. It doesn't look like many can, but if you put a lot of work in, you can really become a jack of all trades. What do you think?
Well, I mean, if we're talking again within the frame or the lens of the sale, right? There's this, one of the best things I loved is a speaker that I saw at AFES happened in 2013 in Bali. His name is Kylie Nung, and he spoke about the stages of a startup. And the first thing like that he talked about, or it's the second stage of a startup, which is after, like the first one is the eventuality. And the eventuality is the fact that if you have an idea of something that you want to see happen in the world, and you can think yourself, if I'm not the one to do this, will this eventually be done by someone else? Then you know that you're dealing with an eventuality. You're dealing with something that will absolutely happen regardless if you do it or not. So why not let it be you? And so now you jump in and you start doing the business. The second stage is when you start realizing that you need to enroll the list of people to help you do that, which is what you're asking here, is how do you get them to kind of come on board? Again, the sales becomes important, and you have to understand you're not expected to be perfect. And the term that he used in his talk, which I thought was brilliant, is called the heist. And so if you look at a movie like Ocean's 11, where like everybody gets together and they're going to do this heist, everybody's in it because it's a great idea and everyone's getting like a ragtag team of people start doing something to do something big, right?
Right. Carefully orchestrated parts.
Yeah. And then what happens is if you have this eventuality and you realize that this is exciting and needs to be done, there are other people that are excited about this idea and you need to kind of recruit them with a methodology of the heist, which is like, hey, I'm not like, because some people are thinking, oh my God, I need to hire these people and I don't have the payroll to do all this. But sometimes you can get people part-time. Sometimes you can form a partnership. If this is an eventuality and needs to be done, be relentless in understanding what options are available to you to make it happen. So sometimes you can find that people will just jump and support you and coach you onto your journey because they're just excited about it and they want to be part of the heist. Everyone wants to be in on the heist. And just the excitement of a heist is enough to get some of the most talented people to jump and be severely underpaid just because of the excitement of the heist. So don't discredit your idea. If you're out there, you know it's eventual and you know you can get some people that want to jump in. When you present the idea, understand that it can come from that energy, which is the heist, which is the fact that people want to be involved on things that are exciting. And if you are excited about it, it is contagious and you'll be amazed by who wants to jump on your team.
I love that, man. That's fantastic advice.
So go and check out the AFES talk from Mindvalley Talks. I think it's called the Stages of Startup, Kylie Nung. I'll make sure that there's a link that possibly can be provided for people that listen to this.
Perfect. Thank you. So one of the things that comes up a lot for career category is overwhelm. There is so much opportunity right now. I see in a lot of people, but especially young people, there's so many opportunities that they can freeze and really not know which career path to take. And if you ask them, you know, like, what's your passion? A lot of times the answer is, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for people in that spot?
Yeah. I mean, for one, there's a lot of pressure that comes into making the right choice.
Totally.
If you mess this up, you're in your 20s. You can't waste your 20s. So if you make the wrong choice, you are screwed. You will be broke and your life will be miserable.
Right.
This is not true.
Totally untrue. Every success story was they were all losers in their 20s. 90% of them were losers in their 20s.
You got it. And like, here's the thing. Like, I did this talk once at an event called How to Be Unstoppable on Your Quest. And the message at the end of it is that, by the way, is this podcast allowing foul language or should I keep it G-rated?
Oh, go ahead. Do your thing.
You can't fuck this up.
Right.
You can't fuck this up. Period. There's no choice you can make that will be a wrong choice in the course of what you're supposed to experience on this life.
Absolutely.
Take a breath. You can't mess this up. And this again touches maybe on the spiritual layer, but if there's somebody who's feeling that overwhelmed, just realize there is no way you can mess this up. Like, whatever was the path that you're supposed to have, it'll happen and it'll be okay. The journey will be fascinating regardless of the outcome. So calm down. You can't mess this up. When you start understanding that you can't mess this up, it automatically takes away the initial thing, which is the fear decision. So now if you fear that, oh my God, I'm going to mess this up, you end up making decisions that will drive you towards those fear-based decisions that might not be as abundant as a love-based decision. And so if you know you can't mess this up, then it's like, what would I love to do right now? And if I can give any concrete advice that I've seen is the best that I've seen work in my choice of career path, was that what is it that actually allows me to get the best business relationships as part of my work, to learn the most as part of my work, and just like, just really be taking on a ship that's cruising into a direction that I enjoy and that I can learn a lot. The money will come and go, but if you can go into a place where you're either gaining assets as far as connections or gaining assets as far as knowledge, there's no way you can go wrong and you'll learn a ton about yourself in the process.
Totally. I like just the simplified, you can't mess this up, because that removes the energetic blockage and maybe that'll allow something to come through, right? I would even, that's a great starting point. I would even go so far as to say, I hope you mess this up, which is a crazy thing to say, but because that's how you learn. You know, I talked about this in one of my other interviews. High level poker players say the worst time for poker players is when they're winning a lot and when they're lucky, because they stop working on their game.
Mm-hmm.
You learn from your mistakes. You really don't learn a lot from a hot streak. So I would even try to say to someone, you know, like, you should make a mistake because that's how you gain experience. But saying that to them can be in itself frightening and like a little much, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love just the simplified sound bite. You can't mess this up. That's almost like a phrase to calm down the limbic system, right? To allow more benevolent and high-minded energetic thought processes, you know?
You bet. And if there's actually a person that I love following and that I've done a lot of work, actually, this was one of the things in my character category. I said, I need to do this course, which is actually the Quest for Personal Mastery with Professor Rao. Anything from Professor Rao, listen to on YouTube. If you're not looking to buy any courses, just listen to this man speak. He taught at the MBA level at like the London Business School and at Columbia. And he was the most sought after speaker. He talks about happiness at an MBA level. And like, all his concepts is stripping away all the dogma, all the religious aspects of philosophy that has been, you know, said over the years by different philosophers, like sages, etc. And that all say the same thing, which is whether you're if you get a job and you lose a job, the only question you ask is, did you grow? If you start a business and it's successful, did you grow? If you start a business and it fails, did you grow? The whole point of the human experience is a path of remembering and growing. And so that's why you can't mess this up. And of course, I'm not going to encourage this, because as you start remembering and learning, you'll notice that it's not about doing the right thing or the wrong thing. And this is a kind of a message from Neil Donald Walsh, but it's about doing what works versus doing what doesn't work. I'll give you an example. I realized that getting drunk and drinking a ton of alcohol and that made me hang over and puke the next day didn't seem to work on the journey of where I wanted to go in my life. And so I realized, hey, this alcohol thing doesn't seem to work. And so I'm going to not do it anymore. And that's not to say that I just did it once. I did that through most of my early 20s, all the way to my mid 20s, in my late teens. Like, I've drank so much and went to so many parties until I realized, like, what else is there for me to learn if this works or not? I'm like, it doesn't work. Mm. It doesn't help build any long, like, it doesn't, it got me, like, I'm not as healthy. I'm in pain. I'm puking when I drink too much. How is this aligned with what works? And I'm like, it doesn't. So then I'm like, yeah, I'm done. I've experienced enough of this to know that it doesn't work. So I'm like, I'm okay. Maybe I'll have a glass of wine here and there, like maybe once every 2 months. Like, but it's just not a need anymore because I realize it just doesn't work.
I want to ask you something personal here before the final question and we'll wrap it up. But it sounds like you sound like a very pragmatic individual. Where do you think your pragmatism came from?
Oh, that's a good question.
No, I mean, oftentimes it's parents. Some people are just born pragmatic. Any resources that inspired you when you were younger?
I don't know.
What you just said was pretty profound, man. I think a lot of people think the things you said, like, oh, this drinking isn't working for me, but then they don't put down the bottle. So I'm just wondering if you have any insight onto where that stoic pragmatism came from.
I honestly have no idea. It's like, you know, I just realized that, you know, I am responsible for everything I like and don't like in this world. And what I would say is, like, you know, through when I got to a point in my life that I actually went, like, hey, I don't like the person I'm seeing in the mirror right now. This is not who I want to be. I think that gave me an energy of realizing, hey,
right,
if I want to be really comfortable and look at the man in the mirror and be like, this is who I've achieved. This is the cathedral that I've built, is the image of who I am and how I operate in this world. And then I realized, hey, this makes me really happy and fulfilled in the process. This is interesting. For me, I think it just comes from knowing that what does work is every time I dive myself deep into ideas and philosophies of personal growth from every different angle and not discriminating under one philosophy or another. So I'm going to study something from Jordan Peterson, who's super, like, clinical psychologist, and I'll study the chakra system, which is just pretty much saying
this. Speaking my language, man.
Man, it's saying the same thing to a different audience. The only question is, are you listening?
So
I would just urge people to listen to their bodies and their intuition. And I know it's like, you have that, like, that monkey mind that will still try to drive you towards these things. Like, I still have my insecurities. I have issues in communication sometimes. I don't like conflict. And I'm like, where does that come from? And I just try to always make sure that I'm not getting myself in a place where I numb the pain, but instead go into it, look into it, explore it, and just see what works.
Well, that sounds like it stems from self-love once again.
There you go.
If you're looking at yourself in the mirror and you say, I want to see a better person here, that stems from self-love. And man, that's something, I've said it before on this show, I've given a lot of thought to what the most important thing in life is, like what it all boils down to, things like happiness. And then I moved on to satisfaction or maybe discipline. But it all starts with self-love. That's where I'm at right now on this most important thing in life journey, because without self-love, nothing's worth improving. Nothing's worth working on. There's no love to give if you don't have it for yourself.
Mm. And if you'd like, Jordan, I'd love to add this one thing, which is just, again, from Conversations with God, Awaken the Species. Neil Donald Walsh says, what is the purpose of life? He's like, it's 25 words. It's really simple. It's to recreate yourself anew in every golden moment of now into the greatest version of the grandest vision you've ever held about who you are. And under his methodology, the answer of who you are is you are an individuation of God looking to experience itself. And Whoa. To know yourself as what you are, which is divine, you have been brought into this realm of duality, of the relative, so that you can see what is not divine and make the choice to experience the not divine, to remember your divinity.
Wow, man. I love that. That's profound stuff.
So we kind of went on a tangent here, but once you start realizing this and you're like, all right, why do I have this urge to go and experience this? And, you know, if it's like, okay, I want to go and like, and I use the example of alcohol because it's an easy one for a lot of people to understand. It's something that most people just accept, but it's like,
right,
all right, I want to feel good. I'm going to drink and then I feel good, but then I feel bad. Then I've done things I regret. Then it's like, there's a pain. And then you do it again because there's something else for you to experience and to learn. And like, you keep doing it. And it's like, until you go, oh, this doesn't work. This is not the root of the issue.
Right.
Yeah. Then again, but there's nothing wrong with it. That's fine. That's the journey. You can't f this up.
Yes.
I mean, like I said, I've had great, great memories, great parties in my 20s. There's nothing I regret from it. It's just that, you know, I learned from it.
Yes.
And it allowed me to grow and remember and step into a closer version of the divinity that I choose.
It's about the progression.
You bet.
The progression is key.
The journey's all it is, so enjoy it.
I love it, man. I love it. Do you have any final words, any final advice for life bookers before we sign off here? You know, the members who are looking to take their career to the next level?
I mean, the career is going to be a result, again, of you doing the work in a lot of different categories of your life book. And what I would say is, first off, like, again, just like we were talking about people feeling overwhelmed when it comes to a career choice, it's not just about career choices, but it's about everything in life. Take a breath. You can't fuck this up. I talked about my first version of the life book, and there was a lot of messages I wanted you to get from me sharing the fact that my first one sucked. It's okay that it sucked, because it actually became a mirror anyways that led to the greatest, like, the greatest awakening of the life book that I have now. And it's a constant progression. So what I would tell people is that, listen, the life book, as a statement, I would say the life book ends up being a GPS of your ego.
Oh, that's perfect.
And people are like, oh, but the ego, it's bad. It's not bad.
Has a negative connotation. No, that's exactly what it is.
It's not bad. Set some goals. This is going to be the blueprint of what experiences that you need to go through in life to remember who you are as a divine being.
Totally.
So go through it. Make the biggest career. Go chase that money if you feel this is something you want. Go chase that fame if you feel this is an experience you want. And then throughout those experiences, you're going to grow so much. You're going to learn so much. And this life book becomes a blueprint of everything that your soul's ego is trying to experience. And the fact is you're going to progress. You're going to edit it. And then most of these needs you're going to see are going to dissolve, because there's actually nothing you really need to be happy. But God, is it fun when you go on that exploration, that journey, that life book actually makes you a lot more conscious throughout the entire experience. So just have fun with it. And I would recommend for everybody, when New Year's Eve come, it's a great, beautiful time to just go through all those categories and update it.
Totally. Already coming up on it. I cannot believe it. Another year with Lifebook, another year with the Lifebook podcast. All these new members, I'm just loving it, man. So grateful for everything that's going on. Thank you, Jason, for taking the time to do this.
It was my pleasure. I hope everybody had a good time, because I sure did.
Yeah, man. I'll hit you up if I'm in Miami, and you do the same. If you're ever up near Chicago, give me a call.
Sounds good, Jordan. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you all so much for listening. This is Jason Campbell and Jordan River signing off, saying have an extraordinary day.